Welcome to the Vinovate Gang podcast for Saturday, April 4th, 2009. I'm Steve Borsch, and on with me is Phil Wilson.
Hello.
And Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
And Graham Thickens is off because it is Graham's birthday. And UPS showed up. His friend from Chile sent him that box of peyote buttons, and he's having a good time. I'm kidding. I'm teasing. Sorry, Graham.
Oh, there's nothing like a little drug humor to start the podcast.
That's right.
Dave's not here, man.
Yeah. So
it's good to have friends. Good to have friends from Chile as well.
It is good to have friends from Chile. Yes. Absolutely. Well,
I just can't get that vision out of my head.
Oh, man. Well, he's on a vision quest.
There you go.
So we were just chatting before we started here about a guy that sent out a tweet this morning that I retweeted, Juju at Juju Bacon, J-U-J-U Bacon, on Twitter, who had a link to a couple of articles at Red IVC, one from 3 years ago on how to shrink a market, about how this guy was in his first company, Infonautics, that was in the encyclopedia market, about a $1.2 billion industry at the time. And Britannica was the leader at $650 million. But then in 93, Microsoft launched Encarta on CD-ROM for $99. And this whole article is about this disruptive technology, CD-ROM, and how this drops in price and so forth, and basically shrinks the value of the overall market. And then the second link was one 3 years later, which, of course, a lot of people already know about that. Microsoft decided that they're going to close Encarta, an apparent victim of Wikipedia. It just doesn't it go to show though that the net is really making the inefficient more efficient.
Well, yes, it is. But what's interesting about this is that Encyclopedia Britannica is still being published. And so I think it has to do with the authority of that in the reputation of that brand more than anything, more than the technology even, because they've been able to pivot since the late 90s to online and produce their product there for charge, although it's easy for us bloggers to get free accounts there, right. and continue to be this, you know, authority record sort of thing, trusted source, I guess. And Encarta never was that trusted source.
Well, that's because Microsoft licensed Funk and Wagnalls, which was not terribly well respected, and to build the base of Encarta. And Encyclopedia Britannica was always the upmarket, thought leading encyclopedia, at least when I was growing up.
I wonder what would have happened if Microsoft had, after Wikipedia started, had just put Encarta as a wiki. Would that have caught on, or would have people not have contributed because it's a Microsoft product?
Well, that's a good question. That's a real good question. But, you know, it would have flown in the face of the why bother to license the content then?
Right. Yeah. Because, you know, the information on Wikipedia, even though it's just totally out there, open source, anyone can contribute, is still actually pretty good.
Right. Well, it is. Except, though, that what I find it really fascinating is how virtually every single class my kids have ever taken, the very last thing that kids can use as sources or any kind of encyclopedia or Wikipedia, anything.
Well, yeah, because it can be gamed. I mean, if I was a kid today, I would just go and change the Wikipedia to suit my own homework needs.
Yeah. Would you really?
I mean, think the kids today would do that?
Well, except though that Wikipedia is put into place, you know, a change model where everything has to be vetted through the person or the people responsible for a category. So it's a little bit tougher to go in and just make wholesale changes. You know, frankly, I think part of it was because of Stephen Colbert and the Colbert Nation about, you know, how he's always telling him to go in you know, change the thing about elephants and in Africa and just totally change the facts to fit what he felt was the right fact. It was just, and they ended up doing that. But
I like that. That's a great idea.
It is a great idea.
Well, I, you know, I think that we probably ought to take a look more at the concerning part of the point is shrinking the market. You know, if for every dollar you make, shrinking the market by $5. That's a little alarming from a commerce perspective, don't you think?
Oh, you can make it up in volume. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you,
well,
Chris Anderson.
You know what, though? I mean, and I know I've pontificated about this before, but when Thomas Friedman wrote A World is Flat, he talked in there about how linear serial processes of any kind, for the most part, can be outsourced, whether it's printing or car manufacturing or, you know, assembly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that once it's defined, it can be outsourced. Even PhD-level finance work, as he pointed out in India, can be outsourced to India for, you know, fraction of the cost of doing it back here. And then Daniel Pink writes A Whole New Mind, where he says the great next great leap in creativity and innovation will come from things happening in parallel and the people that can make associations between things coming at them and create anew. And of course, I look back to the Henry Ford story of him sending his lieutenants out to figure out how to, you know, how other manufacturers are assembling things. And one of his lieutenants is in Chicago at a slaughterhouse. And as the cow goes down the assembly line being cut apart, he makes a joke about, what if we made the assembly line run backwards? Could you put the cow back together? But he takes that idea back to Ford. And that was one of the inputs for Ford to basically create the assembly line and totally disrupt the capability of making cheap cars. And so the, you know, the internet is nothing but a place where, you know, ideas and process and all that can fly around at the speed of electrons, and it comes at you in a lot of different ways. And so people can put things together. And so it just makes sense that sort of the old ways of doing it that had high value are going to have less value as the market becomes more efficient. Becomes easier to deliver. And
so is there an argument to be made to be less efficient? I mean, if you talk about shrinking a market, you know, with that shrinking market goes shrinking job opportunities, employment opportunities, et cetera. And all of a sudden, you know, we're impacting the very, you know, roots of our American way of life. I know it's a really kind of a narrow view, but I'm what ifing. Is it the best thing for our lives?
Well, you know, that's arguable, but, you know, I have a photo of my grandfather when he was probably 35, and he's standing with his cousin in the store they had in South Minneapolis. And that was a point where, I mean, just about it, you know, every other street corner had a butcher shop and a small grocer of some kind and a little hardware store and, you know, all the mom and pop retailers. Well, that became less and less efficient as time went on and people were more and more mobile with automobiles, and they couldn't make it. I mean, there was too much competition close enough that it was inefficient for them to have this store. So they eventually went out of business. But, you know, and then fast forward to Sound of Music with 8 stores. And there were, when I started calling on Sound of Music back in the 80s, you know, there were mom and pop retailers, there were small consumer electronic chains all over the place. And Best Buy was one of the first big box retail concepts. And it was so efficient that it put most of the mom and pops out of business. And I think it's just a natural continual evolution of becoming more and more efficient. And whether it's right or not, I mean, you know, would you rather go to a corner grocery store and pay more because you know them and all that? Or would you rather run over to Target's, you know, great land superstore and get your groceries?
Well, that's an interesting question too, because I worked for one of those mom and pops as far as an audio store. I worked for Music America Warehouse Showroom years and years and years ago, and when this was in Iowa, so World Radio was the company that basically came in and started crushing the small mom and pops, and our basically unique selling proposition was personal service. You knew the people, that you bought your stereo equipment from. It was that intimate sort of social experience. So you kind of wonder, you look back now at what's happening with social media and how it's coming back to person-to-person relationships. I don't know what my point was there, but it's an interesting one.
Well, what you're talking about is the value stack. So, the value stack used to be personal service, and then the value became price and availability and selection and choice.
Yeah.
And now with more and more organizations, Apple doing the Genius Bar and Best Buy buying Geek Squad and so on and so forth, there's more and more understanding that the amount of choice and the level of complexity means that you've got to figure out a scalable model to support people. And I think, maybe somebody is, maybe a getsatisfaction.com is one step toward providing, hand-holding and all of that. I just know that my own personal experience, I go and have coffee with somebody, a friend or a colleague or, we'll talk about what they're doing in their business and on and on and on. And they're totally clueless about, setting up with voice over IP and saving $100. One guy is spending $135 a month on telephony and long distance. And I helped him basically spend 30. So he's saving $100 a month.
And you just put three people out of work. I hope you're happy, Steve.
That's right. But it's a matter of it's almost a consulting kind of model that's necessary. Mm-hmm. And that gets back to your point though, Phil, about personal service.
Well, isn't it? It's interesting that it is coming full circle. It's a more efficient social situation that we have, because we're doing it electronically and through these networks. But it is interesting that it's coming back to that.
But I'm not sure if, we're going to get expert advice. That's what's missing in the shopping experience. I know more about the products than the people at the stores do.
Bingo.
Yeah.
So we're using the internet to gather information to get sort of impressions from places like Engadget and others, and then make buying decisions. And, if it's available at a Best Buy or at a Target, I'll go down and buy it because, you get that immediate, go buy it, bring it home. Right.
But it makes no difference what your buying experience is. Right. I mean, your experience.
Yeah, because it's no different, and they're not adding any value to the situation,
If you're looking at it from a price standpoint, you've gotten the service as far as picking what you want by the experts that you've chosen to listen to online. And if you were to go to Target and I don't want to necessarily indict Target, but any store, and you had a lousy experience, it wouldn't matter to you because the only reason you were there was to pick it up at a certain price, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I buy a lot of stuff at Best Buy only because I like the ability to go in and fiddle with the stuff, mm-hmm. And you really can't do that any other place but there anymore. I mean, you used to be able to do that at CompUSA and Circuit City, but both of those guys are gone now. So that's really the only thing is the demo, the hands-on demo is the only value that you get from a place like that.
Well, you know why those places are gone, right? Because Borscht keeps setting people up on voice over IP and saving them a lot of money.
That's right.
It's all Steve's fault.
You know what, though? I mean, this has struck me as I've, interviewed startups and founders of companies locally here and also been involved with doing a lot of due diligence on solutions with quote-unquote Web 2.0 companies elsewhere. and I know we've kind of talked about this before with, you know, like GoToWeb2.0.net, and all of the solutions that are available in the cloud, and nobody knows about them. I mean, I constantly go there and look at a category, and there are half a dozen or 10 ones that are brand new that I haven't even seen or heard anything about. They're not written up on TechCrunch and Mashable and Read Write Web. Say that fast 10 times. And it's the same thing, though. I mean, how do you, you know, if you're a startup, how do you get the word out? It's just, I mean, this is getting more and more interesting, but it's also getting more and more challenging to deliver a product or a service and get people's attention.
Well, this I think this shrinking marketplace is, I mean, as Tim said, I mean, it's inevitable. We have all of these services and products out there right now that are available on the cloud, on your desktop, whatever. And some of them just aren't going to make it. I mean, if you were to look at Twitter versus Pounce, you know, okay, Pounce came in and couldn't beat Twitter, so they're gone. So the same thing's going to happen on a grander scale with so many of these services, only because I think they have to, because nobody can make a living out of the free model that all of them are using. So ultimately, I think that this model of free will also accelerate the compression of the market. Would you agree?
You know, I'm actually seeing the free model go away in a lot of ways.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's going away in favor of, you know, sign up and you can do a 14-day free trial.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can't afford to have a free delivery. You know, and this is going to sound funny, but have you heard of DimDim?
That sounds familiar. What is that?
So here's the model with DimDim. DimDim is a web conferencing company, and when I was helping Yugma, the local vendor here of web conferencing, DimDim was on my radar screen, but they were really early on. They just came out with their version 5.0, and they have an open source delivery piece, so you can install it on your own servers. And then you start to look at the pricing matrix and the features, and you realize that, you know, I think I'll step up to DimDim Pro for $20 a month because of your needs. So, but you can look at your needs, and they do have a free, you know, 20 participants, a free audio bridge and then one webcam. You can step up to Pro, or you can have Enterprise, or you can just download the open source and stick it on your server. And it's really fascinating. And the one feature they put in here was co-browsing. So I can be delivering a webinar, and if you guys are on, I can control your browsers. And so I can deliver, you know, multimedia content or higher value content without you having to try to watch something coming across, you know, a screen share at 3 frames per second. You can actually see the actual video playing and hear the audio, and it's not pumping through the pipe. But what's interesting about their model is that you look at the free, and it's inherently not terribly interesting. And so, you know, they've really, I think, set the sweet spots for step-ups. And I think that's it's the brilliance of Apple's pricing model, for instance, even though I think they should have a low-end, really low-end laptop. Everybody,
yeah, they do.
I know,
it's called the iPhone.
Yeah.
it's only $200.
And it's only $200. Rumored to be $99 coming up.
The heck you say.
The heck. Hey, if we could, because we don't have a lot of time left, could we segue into a discussion about Minovate? And here's kind of where I want to go with it, is that the Minovate of today is our labor of love, and, you know, we got together because we all wanted to read it and have something like it, and nothing existed. And it's still a few number of authors that are adding content, and then we do the podcast and we do videos and so forth. But we're doing it in addition to our day jobs and our other imperatives. And one of the things that I know we've kind of talked about and kicked around is having more community-centric involvement. So there are more people involved, whether that's, you know, a threaded discussion or whether there's, you know, a company directory, which I really think we need. But, you know, I'm looking at all of the different groups, you know, MEMA and the Social Media Breakfast and the Mini Demo Mini Bar, International Association of Business Communicators, and on and on and on, that all, you know, have needs to have awareness of what's going on. And what kinds of things do you guys think, and of course, anyone listening, we love your feedback, but what do you guys think about?
Maybe we should just put up a wiki, a Minovate wiki that basically allows people to come in and, you know, let's see what pages get developed. Maybe that'll give us a way. Because as it stands right now, it continues to be a labor of love. We don't necessarily have a business model in mind. So, and if we really want to get people's thoughts and impressions, maybe that's a way to go about doing it.
That's a great idea.
You know, maybe somebody will step up and say, you know what, I just happen to have a great business directory. Let's roll it into this. I don't know. It's just my thought. But I mean, I think we all have these visions of what Minovate really does or really wants to do. And just, you know, because of our commitments elsewhere, you know, we haven't been able to flesh it out as much as we really want to.
Right, right.
Tim, what do you think?
Well, I think that there's value in trying to categorize and put sort of a directory-ish kind of thing. I think a wiki is a good idea from a way to manage it kind of perspective, because I don't think we want to sit around and cut and paste people's entries into some sort of a directory. We want to make it a self-sustaining community kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could see, you know, a Twin Cities Twitter directory, Facebook directory, you know, all of that kind of stuff, you know, could be valuable and would, you know, provide a resource. And I think that's what we need to think about is, you know, how can we be more of a resource to the community? But I also think that Steve's idea to make it more in a magazine format is a good one.
Mm-hmm. I always get a kick. Steve is you know, our master of you know, basically, I don't know, what do you call it? Mind mapping?
Yeah.
Steve?
Yeah.
Where you will lay out things, map out things, put together a slide deck. And what the Minovate slide decks that we've talked about in the end is we always stop right short of a business model. It's like, cool. How do we make money on that?
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that is really clear to me, because it's happening in a lot of different areas, is really enlightening and empowering people, whether that happens through training or seminars or workshops or anything. I mean, it is, as my wife says, you know, you can do as much work as you want for free. Mm-hmm. And I would say probably twice a week, I'll get together with somebody for coffee because they want to pick my brain. And I'm willing to do it because it's A, it allows me to think out loud, and B, I get probably more value out of it than I give. And it's always, I don't know, it's always really interesting and enlightening, but my wife beats me up all the time saying, you need to understand that you just gave that guy a $25,000 idea, or you know, on and on and on. And it's like, okay, well, ideas are a dime a dozen. It's all about execution. The point though is that there are so many people out there that are really right now desperate to understand how Twitter can actually affect their business, how they can achieve ROI with the use of social media. And that's an education process to get people to understand that you can't look at it that way, in the same way that you don't walk into a party hoping that you're going to meet some people and wonder, what's my ROI of going to the party?
Exactly.
I mean, you go there to meet people and, you know, maybe something will happen and you want to network and maybe you give some business cards away. Even if you go to an actual networking event and that's the intent and everybody knows that's the intent, you don't walk around with a stack of business cards and hand one to everyone.
That's wrong. Is that wrong? I'm sorry.
I've been told. And so you know, there's a whole range of knowledge that needs to be delivered, and there are a lot of people that want to know how do I get in the game and how do I do that. So I mean, maybe it's as simple as that.
Big gaping pause.
Yeah,
right,
crickets. I'll put the crickets in.
Well, I mean, I think what we want to say here is that we want to move Minovate forward in a positive way that not only you know, allows us to talk about the things we're interested in and involved in, but also serve as a resource for more people, and that it reaches beyond those four of us in the gang.
Yeah. Well, and then Don Smith from General Mills and Gary
right.
Kohling, who's on our contributor list. Yeah. Yeah.
We got to get Gary to actually contribute. That's what we really need.
Yeah, he's a busy guy, but
he is a busy guy. I saw him, as a matter of fact, this week, and I got to tell you, I wanted to pass this along to you, and I'm sorry, this is probably off topic, but you know, I've made many a trip to the Best Buy campus in the last year, and it's interesting to see the activity inside the hub of that place as compared to what's happening in the economy. And my last visit there, which was shortly after the first of the year, the place was quite quiet and there wasn't a lot of activity. However, over the last week, I went there and activity has picked up quite a bit. And it's I don't know if it's a barometer of business, but it was interesting to see that the place is starting to buzz again.
Huh.
It was very interesting.
That's great. Well, the Minnesota High Tech Association is having their annual event. And Tom Kiefer asked or mentioned that Graham Thickens and Steve Borsch could be interesting panel leaders. And I'll be leading a panel on essentially the ROI of social media with Gary and with Matt Meintz from Reside. If you remember, he was the guy that did their closed loop marketing talk at the Visi conference. And then a fellow from Padilla Spear Beardsley, whose name escapes me at the moment, sorry. But it looks like this is going to be shaping up to be an interesting panel. So I'll look forward to that.
Where is this happening? I'm sorry, Steve.
This is going to be at, here, I'll look it up. You guys just carry on without me here.
You don't know where you're speaking. That's not good.
No, I do. I do. It's
it's not good if he doesn't know the day of the event.
That would be even worse.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay, 1 second. You know, I'd be so completely lost without being able to just quickly hit the Google adventure. All right, so their spring conference is I'll put it in the show notes. It's Wednesday, April 15th. So it's a week and a half away.
And the event is what?
The Minnesota High Tech Association.
Okay, gotcha.
It's their spring conference. And the focus of it is the changing face of business and technology, leadership strategies for today's uncertain economy.
Wow.
So, yeah, should be good. Mark Lautenbach, the GM for IBM North America, whom I've met when I was at Lawson. George Buckley, the CEO of 3M. The governor's usually there.
Very nice.
So should be a good event.
Good deal.
Also, Monday, I will be at the Mini WebCon event, and I'll be covering that for Minovate.
Okay.
And that is, you guys know Doc Searles.
Yes.
So Doc will be there speaking.
So ask him when you see him, Steve, ask him when Clue Train 2 comes out.
You know, I will. I absolutely will. Yeah. Also, Bruce Schneier. I don't know if you guys follow Schneier on security. Guy's awesome. I mean, the stuff that he sees.
Very cool.
I'll put those guys in the notes as well. So good. Well,
one thing I meant to ask you about, Steve.
Yeah.
Is about a week ago you talked about Skimmer, which is this new air app that Fallon has released.
Yep.
I haven't had a chance to try it yet. You know, I've heard a little bit about it. Leo Laporte was talking about it on Net at Night a couple episodes ago. And it sounds interesting, but, you know, why do you think Fallon's done this? Is it just that they've created this internal tool and then they're just releasing it to see what happens? Or
no, no. I ended up doing that post on Minovate about it. And what was really absolutely crystal clear, because I went into it, and this is why I wanted to interview Chris Wiggins, went into it a little bit skeptical about why an ad agency would deliver an app like this. And then when I downloaded the app and I started to play with it and use it, I saw a huge white space in the left column and a whole bunch of area up in the header. And I thought, okay, sure as hell, they're going to go and they're going to get this in everyone's hands and then they're going to start delivering ads. Well, I couldn't have been more wrong. Their entire shift in direction as an organization has been toward what they call the generous brand or brand generosity. And they're walking the talk. I mean, they're preaching to their clients that it's not the freemium model writ large, but it's about generosity as the as they call it, the recipe for modern branding. And they wanted to basically show that they're walking the talk. They're delivering this piece of value into the community. And it's an experiment, and they want to see what happens and, you know, what, you know, how people take it on and so forth and so on. But they're not, you know, they're not monitoring usage other than the downloads and, you know, things like that. So that's really their motivation.
Well, I'll definitely have to download it and try it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Julio asked me before he did his article in the Pioneer Press about some of my thoughts and so forth. And, I'm not a huge fan of live streaming per se. I'm a real fan of editing, editing and packaging and delivering a piece of value or chunks of value. And I don't necessarily, you know, if I'm following Tim Elliott, I don't want to see everything, every photo you upload, every video you favorite, everything you say on Twitter and, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's like, okay, if I'm following 500 people, you know, take 500 times five different places that people are participating. It's like, I'd like to get some work done. I'm not, the jury for me is still out on live streaming as a concept. I like following people on Twitter. That's easy, but everything else, I'm not sure. So I'm running TweetDeck and Skimmer simultaneously, and I'm just going to experience them for a while and then make a decision maybe I'll continue just having both open because they are different. They are different paradigms, and maybe use one for one set digital breadcrumbs and the other for another. I see TweetDeck though. I see TweetDeck expanding
the
connections.
Too.
I think that's where they're going. They're going to continue to, you know, with 12 seconds and that Twit Scoop and all that. I think they're going to continue accelerating that.
Yep. Well, indeed.
Well, yep.
And one last note on Twitter, Haskell's wine store has started to tweet at the wine people.
Oh, really?
yeah, which is kind of funny. And they're actually using it quite well. I'm not sure if it's an internal thing or if they've hired an agency or what, but they're all over it promoting their nickel sale right now.
Okay.
So kind of interesting.
I have to admit that it's a little weird to have, I have a Minneapolis bakery, a Minnesota construction company, and about 10 realtors following me. And, you know, just, I don't know.
So you're gonna sell your
Twitter
house
or on Twitter or
on Twitter on Twitter
physically?
No, yeah, right, physically. Yeah, I have my tinfoil hat on right now. I'm looking outside just make sure they're not there. Man,
that makes sense. It's good to see though the local companies are starting to get into the Twitter thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you seen the? We've hit the Twitter tipping point. I mean, it's just exploded. Exploded.
Yeah, but what I find is that actually Facebook is starting to get more impactful to the businesses that I work with.
Yes.
And so I'm spending a lot more time working with Facebook now than I am working with Twitter. I mean, Twitter is still part of the arsenal, but it's you know, it's not as central as it was 6 months ago.
That's really interesting.
And we should point out that we do have a Minovate Facebook group and a Facebook page.
So. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you so much.
That's really interesting, though, about spending more time on Facebook, because I've spent
a lot more time on Facebook, really? And I've had more and more people ask me about Facebook. In fact, I've started meeting with my neighbors, telling them about how to use social media in general. So
interesting.
Well, I think it has to do with the and what's funny is that, you know, a lot of the interactions on Facebook start on Twitter. So, you know, We're taking tweets and we're putting them on the status, updating the status from Facebook, and those status updates get, you know, favorites or you know, they get likes or whatever, and then they also get comments. And so I think that if Twitter had the kind of threaded commenting kind of deal that is in the Facebook newsfeed now, that it, you know, that would also be more interesting than all these at replies that we're doing, because that to a new user is very difficult to get your head around.
True. Yes. Yeah, very true.
But it's really easy when you look at the, you know, the Facebook newsfeed there and you see, you know, okay, I'm going to comment on this particular status update. And then you can get into a mini conversation there. That makes a lot of sense. So I think that's why we're seeing a lot more interaction there than we are on Twitter.
I find it interesting that the people that use Facebook don't necessarily understand Twitter, because I use Twirl to interface with my Facebook. I mean, it updates my Facebook status. And I remember when I, not this Friday, but last Friday, did the Follow Friday thing and put up my, you know, I got a couple of comments from people that follow me on Facebook saying, what the heck does that mean? You know, with all the hashtags and the at symbols and that sort of a thing. So it's definitely Facebook is a less geeky thing than Twitter is right now.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. I still rail against the walled garden. I have such a tough time with that.
Get past it, Borsch. Come on.
Yeah, I know. I know. I should.
It's interesting because I think it's getting pushed and pushed and pushed more to the limits as far as Facebook understanding, you know, what's going on with people and how walled they can be. So it's interesting, but I agree with Tim. I'm spending a lot more time on Facebook.
Huh. Well, I guess I'll have to hang around there so I can be like you guys.
We don't want your kind in our walled garden.
Yeah. Right.
I'm out there taking a leak in your walled garden is what's going on.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, I should probably edit that out.
No comment.
Okay. Well, listen, have a great weekend, gentlemen.
Yeah, you too.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great.
Alrighty.
Yep.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'll see you.